tide is right. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea for the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Good afternoon. Welcome to The Winds of Change. I am Mark Kurowski, the spiritual director and executive director of My Spiritual Advisor, and I am sitting in for Father Anthony Bush today. Christina, unfortunately, is not with me either, so I am flying solo. I hope that you'll put up with my Catholic craziness and our Christian madness, so to speak. I'm very excited to talk to you today because as I go through the program, I hope that you will reach out to me. You can reach me two ways, by email at mark, M-A-R-K, at myspiritualadvisor.com. That's A-D-V-I-S-O-R.com. Or you can tweet me at myspiritadvisor to get your comments on the show or to ask me questions. I am looking forward to hearing from you. Now, today I'm going to have a lot on my plate, so this is the hopeful agenda, and as time permits, we'll see what we can get to. But I want to talk to you today about the main difference between Protestants and Catholics. I want to talk about what's up with Indiana and the poor. That'll be coming up in the second segment. And the third segment, we want to talk about, did Pope Francis meet with a transsexual yesterday or not? That's our third topic that we're going to talk about. I can't wait to get to that either. And then our fourth segment today, we're going to talk about a great article by Phil Rosenthal and another great article by Bill Plaschke in the Chicago Tribune this morning about Ernie Banks. And one article is about Ernie Banks, and the other article is about Marshawn Lynch. And I want to talk about those. And I also want to talk about, you know, of course, I'm in Chicago. I'm a Hoosier, and I'm so excited because I'm always wanting to talk about the fact that I bleed Cubby Blue. Sorry, Sox fans, but I bleed Cubby Blue, and I love to talk about the Cubs. And so I think, though, in the advent of the passing of Mr. Cub, that I want to give some reflections on that. But that will be at the end of the program. Now, you need to know that today the statue of Ernie Banks will be in Daly Plaza and for the next 4 days. So if you want to go down and pay your respects, I'm not going to go do that. But I think that's a wonderful honor and tribute to him. But I'm going to give my tribute nonetheless. So one thing to remember, this is listener-supported Winds of Change. Be sure that if you have a moment to help out with our fundraising efforts. If you've never been here to St. Stanislaus Kostka, we are in a beautiful building that is continually being rehabbed. The rehabilitation that has been done is absolutely excellent. If you haven't come down here yet, you really need to come down the Kennedy to exit 49A, take Division West, and then you want to turn north on Noble Street. And really, the front of the church is on Noble Street, although the address is Evergreen. So you should take a moment to do that. It's a really beautiful building. It's a marvel. They've done some wonderful things, and you need to take a look at that. So today, like I said, we're going to start off today talking about what the difference is between Protestants and Catholics. And I am a former Methodist minister. I became Catholic in 2002. I've been a pastoral associate, a campus minister, all kinds of lay ministry. I am going to come back at some point and talk about the dark underbelly of being a lay minister in the Catholic Church at some point, I hope. And what I mean by that is that sometimes we think those pastoral associates that we see, they can live a pretty tenuous existence because of their reliance upon employment at will. So we'll talk about that. Now, what I want to talk about today, about the difference between Protestants and Catholics, I found out because when I was an undergraduate at Indiana University, South Bend, not that I want to plug my alma mater, but Indiana University, South Bend, right. So anyway, when I was an undergraduate, I wrote a paper in a history class, and the professor was wonderful, Dr. Glenn Chestnut, and he was willing to allow me to write this paper on my interest, because he knew I'd be going to the seminary, on John Wesley, the founder of the United Methodist Church, his use of a 4th century monk in Roman-occupied Palestine. And that monk's name is Macarius, and he's a saint of the Eastern Church. And Wesley, the connection there that Dr. Chestnut made was, well, you know, this is ancient history that we're studying, and it is Roman-occupied Palestine, and you do have an interest in spirituality, Eastern spirituality, as well as Methodism. So, hey, throw it in there, and let's shake it up, and let's see what comes out. I did that. It was a wonderful excursion. And then when I went on to, I wrote that paper, and I got a decent grade. And then I went on to Duke University, where I ran into the chief scholar for Wesleyan studies named Dick Heitzenreiter, and he became my mentor. And he had this great way about him. I felt very comfortable, and I thought to myself, you know, I wonder if this paper's any good. So I took the paper to him, and he said, this is really good. I really like it. And it went on to, he went on to sponsor me for about a year and a half in translating Macarius's homilies and comparing them to Wesley's translation, because Wesley did translate the writings of the church fathers for his followers. As I began to look at the translations, I noticed that whenever it came to a certain topic, Wesley would edit that out and move on to the next section, or he would put his own notes in there to let people know what he wanted to have them to know, you know, as his follower in Methodism. Well, that topic that he kept editing out on a regular basis was original sin. Whenever Macarius would talk about his understanding or the Catholic or the Christian understanding of original sin prior to the 1500s, he would, Wesley would edit that out, but then Macarius would talk about how sin was something foreign to us. And, you know, we talked about that last time that I was here, about how sin itself in an Eastern mentality is something totally foreign to us. If you think of the story of the Garden of Eden, you'll think of how Eve and Adam, they were in this paradise, and sin was not there. It was a beautiful existence. And then along comes in the story, there are two creation stories. So in the story, along comes Satan as the serpent, and he tempts Eve. And Adam, you know, didn't go kicking and screaming. He readily acquiesced. And the issue there was that they decided that they knew better than God. Now, that's not the part where Protestants and Catholics disagree. Now, my personal opinion, and those of many others, is that the sin was not in the quote-unquote eating of the fruit. The sin was in the decision that Eve made, which was, and then Adam went, yeah, you know, that's a great idea. And that was not so great idea, but that's what he said. And that was what we had there was the decision that they knew better than God. That's the heart of it. You know, in fact, if you think about it, the chief angel who defeats Satan, his name is Michael, who is like God, is what that name means. And the main way which he fights against Satan is against Satan's claim, which is his claim is, I am as good or better than God. I am like God. And the fact of the matter is nobody is like God. Nobody is as merciful. Nobody is as kind and wonderful and terrific. So that's not where Protestants and Catholics disagree. Where they come to the disagreement is, what are the results, the effects of original sin? And the effects of original sin are, one, that we have a will, and the will is where we decide. Now, you saw where in the creation story where Adam and Eve made a bad decision. that was an act of will. And their act, and Catholics view that and go, well, the will was weakened in original sin. So from that point forward, the will was tempted and it's weak, but it's just weakened. Now, intellectually, we are able to perceive and see things. Well, think about the story. The story goes on that they looked at everything and went, hey, well, you know, hey, this fruit looks good. This tree looks pretty good. No matter what God says, this looks pretty good. So they decided in their own self, in their intellect, that they knew better than God. So the intellect was dimmed. So from that point forward, their will was weakened and their intellect was dimmed. That's the Catholic understanding and viewpoint of it. Well, the Protestants take a different viewpoint, and that is that the will was obliterated and the intellect was totally darkened. So the deal is that that's where we are differentiated, and that has lots and lots and lots of consequences. But chief among them I want to talk about today is how we view other people. And that's going to have to do with how, when we talk about Indiana and how they deal with what they're doing with the poor, what's their deal with the poor. And then we're going to talk about Pope Francis and him possibly meeting with a transsexual. What is that all about? You know, so we're going to be talking, the reason why that comes down to that is this. Catholics believe that the will was weakened and the intellect was dimmed. That means that there still is the possibility to perceive God in some form, and then the will was weakened, but it wasn't eliminated. So therefore, humans do have the ability to, number one, perceive God, and number two, make a decision to come close to God or to follow God. What that means then is, for us as Catholics is and Christians, is that we are now able to see that God, that there is some truth in other people's understanding of God. There's truth in other people's understanding of trying to muddle their way through life and to make their way through life. I don't know about you, but it doesn't seem like life is an easy proposition. People don't do the things that we want them to do. We have to take jobs that we don't necessarily want to do. We have to, quote unquote, make do all the time. And so we're constantly making do. We're constantly looking for the best thing about the situation that we're in. It's never ideal. It's never perfect. And that's part of growing up, is understanding that we can enjoy life and love life, even though it's not perfect. But we still struggle, and there are others who struggle. Other people struggle like we struggle. And so they may not be believers. They may not be Christians. They may not be people who have the same viewpoint on life as we do, but their lives are valuable because they have the ability to perceive God in some form. They have the ability to move themselves and make decisions in their life to try to be a better person. Trying to be a better person is a noble, noble pursuit. It's a noble pursuit because it's really a person perceiving in themselves that they want to make themselves better for the fullness of humanity. They want to have a better life. And however they define that, there are people of very good will who are not Christians, and we have to have some type of a foundation upon which that we can relate to them and love them, because the chief aim of our enterprise here is to love God and to love neighbor, which means that we need to be in unity as Christians. Wherever there is one Christian in the world that hurts, we are all hurting. We're all part of the body of Christ. And the second thing is that we need to be people of harmony. And that's what the church teaches us about other religions. They can perceive God in some way. Maybe we say it's not the fullness of truth, and I would expect that they would say that we don't have the fullness in truth, and if either of us don't believe that, then we really shouldn't be believing what we believe and walking what we walk and talking what we talk. So, that being said, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the Indiana and the poor, what's up with that, and how we should treat the poor and that kind of thing. So, I'm Mark Konarowski, and you're listening to listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
we join our Chaldean Catholics in prayer to the Mother of God for peace in the Middle East. Mother of God, Virgin Mary, be for us a safeguard from all illnesses and hardships. Through the great love you have for Christ, ask and beseech him to be merciful to us, to give healing to our ailments, to console the downtrodden, to unite those who are scattered, and to forgive us.
The Winds of Change
on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. You've heard us say that Winds of Change is listener-supported. That means you help us stay on the air with your dollars and your prayers. And we are asking for that help now. Please take a moment and go to our website, windsofchangeshow.com. That's windsofchangeshow.com. On the upper right-hand side of the page, there is a link. Support Winds of Change Show. Click on that link and donate securely with any major credit card. With your help, Winds of Change will continue to bring you the truth.
Welcome back to Winds of Change. Again, I'm Mark Kurowski, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. It's good to have you with me today. I am flying solo. Christina is not with us, unfortunately. She is swamped, I think the explanation is, and so we want to pray for her, absolutely. And she's such a wonderful person to have with us. Now, before the break, I talked about how the Catholic understanding of original sin really allows us to accept people and what efforts they are making toward becoming better persons, toward making life better for other people. Well, I come from the state of Indiana, and to say that Indiana and Illinois could be different in our approaches to the way that we treat the poor through governmental programs would be an understatement. I know that I have constantly spoken out and railed against the idea that we should test people for drugs because they're poor, and somehow we think that poor people have the money that they can afford drugs. And so it just is a crazy notion. I was a former pastor in Gary, Indiana. I cannot say enough about how wonderful the people of Gary are. But there was a breaking story this morning in the Post Tribune of Northwest Indiana, and it said that Indiana has their plan to expand their version of Medicaid has been approved. So Governor Mike Pence said no, he didn't want to have a Medicaid expansion, but he would present one. Well, what we were all afraid of, what I was afraid of, is that there's a tendency when we start talking about programs for the poor that there's a misunderstanding of what it's like to be poor, what it means to be poor. So you have people making policy for the poor that don't understand what it means to be poor. And frankly, I just think that our attitude toward the poor is just reprehensible. It's as if poor people are poor because they're immoral, because they're lazy, because they're stupid, because they don't make good choices. Well, sometimes the choices that they have to make are choices that we would never want to have to make. And there's usually, what I usually say is stop hating on the poor. Okay, just stop hating on them. Because I worked with so many people in Gary, Indiana that are considered poor, that are the hardest working people you ever meet in your life. I know I meet other people that are like, well, yeah, you know, I go hang out at the program, you know, the welfare office, and you should look around and see what those people look like. Well, just because somebody looks like something and they're trying to get something to get ahead and help themselves doesn't necessarily mean that they themselves are morally inferior. I met some really great, great people that are trying to make a difference. There's a great program called Dads in Gary, where men are trying to encourage younger men to remain fathers in relationships and remain connected to their children. We ought to be supporting those folks wholly and completely. But in the paper today, I was really surprised, and I'm going to say something that I didn't think that I would say about Governor Mike Pence's policies toward the poor, and that is, good for him in that he at least came as far as he could with his philosophy of, of government. See, they had Indiana had this thing called Healthy Indiana Plan, and it was just terrible. It was the most awful health insurance program. It was highly inexpensive for people who don't have any money, and you had to wait 6 months without coverage before you could apply for it. Now, how ridiculous is that? I need health insurance. Oh, well, thank you very much, but you have to wait 6 months. Now, that was just craziness. And so what you're doing is you're subjecting people. Why would you subject them to going without health insurance? Oh, well, because they're poor, and we got to really see if they really don't need it. Now, that's just the craziest notion. So I have to give them kudos, though, because here's the thing. This expansion of Medicaid comes under the Obamacare plan. Now, conservatives have been, on one side, have been railing, and in Catholic conservatives in particular, have been railing like crazy about how we hate Obamacare. Well, here's the thing. I do not like the HHS mandate, okay? That I'm not speaking out in favor of that at all. You know, this charade of making it look like somehow the premiums that we're paying are not paying for birth control. Okay, I'm not in agreement with that at all. But my point is this, is that they did a great job of fashioning the Healthy Indiana plan to bring it up to, the standards of Obamacare. And that was wonderful. It's wonderful because I am a welfare baby. I'm here because there were so many people who helped me. And one of the organizations that helped me was the federal government and their support of my health care when I was the ages from 0 to 6. Those are the 6 years that we fully funded the war on poverty. And that's exactly how it should be. When you read, if you were to go to the Catechism of the Catholic Church and go to paragraph 1877, chapter 2, the human community, and begin to start reading, the views on how we ought to view the poor and how they live are totally different than what we tend to say. We tend to say, well, you know, you got to make sure that the poor aren't lazy. Well, let's look at this, my friends. The Mexican culture is one of the hardest working cultures in the world. My daughter lives in Mexico City right now. They give their employees 1 week paid time off, total, sick time, vacation time, personal time, 5 days. That's all they get in their first year. That's it. And that's for an executive level position. So they're working all the time. And the work hours are a lot different. But when you go, when I was over at a good friend of mine just got an apartment, and the owners of his apartment are actually from Mexico. And I want to tell you, they're just some of the hardest working people you've ever seen in your life. I am hard pressed to really run into somebody who is a poor person who is lazy because they're just lazy. So my point, though, is that our view of original sin says that if people are making a goodwill effort to make their way in the world, then we ought to respect that. So here we have on two ends. I am giving Governor Mike Pence kudos because he actually negotiated a plan that I think pushed the boundaries of his philosophy in government intervention in the lives of people. He's to be commended because we as Catholics ought to support government intervention in the lives of poor people for the positive. And I think that sometimes we get all caught in this rut. Now, on the other hand, there are things that the liberals had to give up. They had to give up this notion of that nobody was going to pay for premiums. Now, in the Healthy Indiana plan, the folks have to pay for premiums. They have to pay $8 for the first visit to the emergency room and then $25 for every visit thereafter, trying to encourage people not to use the emergency room, keep our health care costs low, and have them go to primary care physicians. They also have co-pays in other ways, too. So there are those who are not crazy about that, but there's a great compromise, and I think that we need to celebrate that. Another thing, too, that I want to talk about is that with Pope Francis coming from an area where poverty was really, really visible and us able to see how people who are in a system where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, it should open up our minds to the possibilities, because Welfare dependency is not what we think it is. LaDonna Pavitt of the Urban Institute testified before Congress. Let's see, when is this that she testified before Congress? It's in the last year. No, it wasn't. It was about a decade ago. But she testified before Congress that the majority of families who leave the welfare system do so after a relatively short period of time. About half leave within a year, 70% within 2 years, and almost 90% within 5 years. So people are getting off of welfare as fast as they possibly can. And then it says, but many return almost as quickly as they left. About 45% return within a year and 70% return by the end of 5 years. But then the cycle repeats itself. You have half leaving after the first year, 70% within 2 years, and almost 90% within 5 years. So it is a structural, poverty is a structural problem. We will always have the poor with us. I believe I'm quoting somebody famous there, namely Jesus. We will always have the poor with us. So normally, the state of Indiana has this problem with the poor. It's like they almost hate them. They make them test for drugs, but not people who get a business loan. The state government opts out of every federal program that would assist our state in helping the poor and alleviate the pressure on us. And it doesn't matter because the money given to the poor is poured into the economy right away. So usually I would be saying how awful the state of Indiana is, but today they deserve a pat on the back. And that's because they have taken this this program, the Healthy Indiana Plan, and they've made a difference. So I think also as I'm reading it, and I hope that it continues to be true, that they're doing so with some dignity. I cannot stress to you enough how the people that I know who are poor, they don't want to be there. They don't want to be living hand to mouth. They don't want to be worried. Who wants to live day to day worried about whether or not they're going to have enough to pay for car insurance or for health care coverage now? I mean, that's just a brutal thing. The difference between a rich person and a poor person who gets up in the morning isn't whether or not they want their children to be fed or for their children to go to good schools or that they would have health care coverage or that they would be able to enjoy some things in life. The difference is not whether they are industrious or not. Truly, the vast majority of time, the difference between someone who is rich and poor is opportunity. And we as Christians believe to each as all have as they have need. That's straight out of the Acts of the Apostles. So I'd like today for us to get out of our rut, get out of our idea of what we preconceivedly think of the poor. Now, that may change the way that we handle programs of the federal government toward the poor. Is there a way that we can promote dignity, human dignity? Is there a way that we can help those who are in poverty, like my mother was in poverty and I was in poverty in the United States? Is there a way that we can help so that dignity is restored? Sometimes our programs are counter, the laws that we put in place, we think are trying to achieve one end and they don't. But I think that for today, what I really would like us to do is to reconsider how we view people, just people in general. And I'm going to talk more about that when we get back from the break. The question is, did Pope Francis really meet with a transsexual? Stay tuned. I'm Mark Kurowski, and you're listening to The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush.
Winds of Change broadcasts from the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, located two blocks north off Division on Noble at the Division Street exit off the Kennedy. Since 1867, St. Stanislaus Kostka Church has been serving the faithful of Chicagoland since 1867. With your help, St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, can continue its mission to bring Christ to His people. Please donate now by going to sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. And click on the donations link to make a secure donation with a major credit card or debit card. With your help, St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, will continue its restoration and will continue to thrive for the body of Christ.
The Winds of Change
on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
For centuries, spiritual directors have assisted people along the journey of faith to understand how God is working in their lives and guide them into a deeper reality with God. My Spiritual Advisor stands in this long tradition of spiritual direction by offering safe, quality spiritual direction, inspiration, and instruction to those who are religious and who are seeking spiritually. If you think you would like to try spiritual direction as a way to be closer to God, then visit My Spiritual Advisor at myspiritualadvisor.com. I'm Mark Kurowski, the founder and executive director of My Spiritual Advisor. Contact me at mark@myspiritualadvisor.com. That's My Spiritual Advisor with an O. We are deepening the spirituality of humanity. Welcome back to the Winds of Change. I am Mark Kurowski. I like hearing my own promo, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush on the Winds of Change. Listener-supported Winds of Change. Be sure to make a donation to the site on the website. I've been talking about our openness to others and the way that we go about encountering them. I was looking online this morning. By the way, I've dumped Google. I now have Yahoo as my homepage on my browser because I think that Google is trying to take over the world. Not really. but whenever a company I think gets too big for their britches, I try to dump them and go to their competitor. So Yahoo, they list all these news reports that they've gotten on an RSS feed. And what we had today, I saw, was an article that said that Pope Francis has met a Spanish transsexual and his fiancée at the Vatican, opening his doors to a man dubbed the devil's daughter by a local priest, media reports said Tuesday. Diego Neria Lejarraga met the pontiff on Saturday after writing to him in December to complain that he was treated as an outcast in his parish in Plasencia, in western Spain, according to the Spanish daily Hoy. Now, I think that what I love about Francis is that there really doesn't seem anybody that he isn't going to love. Now, that's really difficult for us. It's difficult for me. I mean, sometimes we meet people that just don't smell good, or we meet people that just don't look right, or, you know, to us. So that's really a difficult thing. And yeah, that is. But I have a student. And I told the story in the reflections that I published. By the way, if you want to ask a question or make a comment to me, you can tweet it at My Spirit Advisor. That's at My Spirit Advisor. And then you can also send me an email, mark@myspiritualadvisor.com, so I can answer those if you wanted to on the air. But so here we have Pope Francis, and this all plays into that notion, which is that we as Christians do not view people as garbage, as so broken that they cannot be fixed. That is just totally contrary to our notion. I cannot even tell you how many people come to me for spiritual direction that have all kinds of issues that they're struggling with, but when you meet them, they're as normal as you are, because you and I both have our own crosses that we carry. A great man, Neil McShane in Munster, Indiana, once told me that. I said to him, "Neil, you're like my hero. I look at you and I just see how you handle life. I just think it's so amazing." And he turned to me and said, "Well, listen, brother, we all have our crosses that we carry." That is so absolutely true. I think that in a person who is struggling with their sexuality, with their identity, that's got to be something that's really, really tough. Okay, now whether or not I agree with what their solution to the problem is, that doesn't have anything to do with it. I think becoming a father has really taught me something. My mother used to say to me, I'd say, "Well, what do you think of that decision I want to make, Mom?" And she'd say, "I don't care. It's your life. You got to live it. I'm going to love you anyway." That's the attitude that we as Christians, we should have in one segment of our life. We should be able to say to people, "Come on in, come on over, come on. We want you to be next to us." It's not easy. Oh my gosh, it is not easy. Sometimes people say things to us that are so offensive. They offend us. They may do something that just is so contrary to how we believe that life should be lived or how God has shown us that life should be lived. No doubt about it. But what Pope Francis is showing us, look at all the people that he's met with. He spent Christmas with juvenile delinquents. You know, juvenile delinquents, that's what we call them. He has spent time with those who are mentally ill. He has welcomed those who have disfiguring diseases. Do you remember that man that had the tumors that were growing all over his face? And here's Francis holding him and stroking his hair and even kissing him. And I mean, it's like, what? Who saw that coming? That's awesome. You know, that's exactly what we want. We want to see that. That's the church that we want to see, because those who don't have hope need hope. And we want God to be their hope. And that's what needs to happen, is that we need to have examples. I think it is so telling and almost comical that if you look at all the new bishops that are coming in, none of them are moving into the apostolic palaces. None of them are moving into the mansions that were built by their predecessors. They're moving into the cathedral, into the rectories of the cathedrals, and living with other priests. There could be nothing more healthy than having to live with other people and have to move around their idiosyncrasies and deal with the way that they either leave dishes out or they don't leave dishes out or don't put the remote back in the place where they need to put the remote back. That's a particular pet peeve of mine. But anyway, so I mean, there's all kinds of things that living with people teaches you that you have to be patient about. You can't go off on people all the time. You know, as I have worked with some priests, but then I've also worked with other priests who are wonderful and glorious and magnificent in the way that they've handled life. So I think that there's always this spinning thing where we have to view people in a way that gives them room. None of us have reached perfection here on earth. None of us. So I think the goal is that we need to be on the road to perfection. We need to be on the road to being the best person that we can be for God and for other people. So when I read this article, I think that some might be scandalized because the 48-year-old underwent sexual reassignment surgery. And he told Francis in a letter that he was treated poorly by parishioners and he was sad. And the Argentine pontiff, as I'm quoting the article, known for calling people unannounced, rang La Jeringa on Christmas Eve and set up the meeting. You know, I am tempted just to write a letter to Pope Francis just to see if I could get a phone call. I think that would just be like the coolest thing in the world, would be just to be able to have Pope Francis. Hello? Hey, Mark, this is Pope Francis. What? I think that, you know, I probably have the same reaction to that as I do to this person that keeps calling me on the phone telling me that there's legal action against me from the IRS. Have you gotten one of those phone calls where they keep calling you and say, hello, you've got legal action? And I said, wait a minute, the IRS would mail me a letter. They're not going to call me on the phone, so goodbye. And I'm on the no-call list, by the way, and I hung up. But, I mean, I probably would treat that phone call. But I think that the point here is that who we are is not determined by the work that we do, right? Who we are determines the work that we do. The way we live our life is determined by the kind of person that we are. And the point of faith and of receiving the Eucharist, think about the Eucharist. This is a mind-blowing concept. The Eucharist comes into your body. It breaks down. Jesus goes into every part of your body carried by your blood as nourishment. Nourishment for your bones. When you receive the Eucharist, it's my personal belief that you ought to believe and think and just contemplate and just meditate on the moment that the God of the universe, the one who created the heavens and the earth, has just entered your body and is going to change you from the inside out. That is amazing. That's an amazing thing. And we ought to celebrate that. But that also says that the God of the universe who created all humanity, the sun shines on the evil and the good. The rains come on the crops of those who are despicable and those who are honest. Because we are all God's children. To ask God not to bless somebody or to ask them to have the type of justice that you want is not, that's not what God is about, because even the siblings that we can't stand, they are still God's children. So as we approach people of who have a same-sex attraction, or as we approach people who have gone through transgendered surgery, we have these issues that we're going to have to face. Now, we have a choice. There's an ancient document called the Didache. It's one of the oldest Christian writings. And the opening line is that there are two ways, the way of light and the way of darkness. And I think that the way of light, as the church has shown and as Pope Francis is demonstrating, is one where you, on the one hand, proclaim the truth that we ought to do certain things, we ought to live a certain way. And at the same time that you're proclaiming that, be open enough to allow other people who disagree with you to have room to breathe in the room. Everybody needs to step back and have mercy, because we were all created in the image and likeness of God. We all have fallen. We all have done things that have fallen short of the glory of God. And that being the case, then the first thing that we ought to do is not look at the other, but look at our own house. How are we living our lives? Are we being truthful? Are we being honest? Are we being loving? Are we taking care of what needs to be taken care of? Are we doing things? And then, after we've done them, we need to stop and take a look for a second and go, wait a minute, is my head getting too big? Do I think that I am somewhat better because I've done this over that person? Well, we're going to talk about being an example when we come back from the break. We're going to talk about being an example. I'm going to talk a little bit about Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks, and Marshawn Lynch of the Seattle Seahawks. I'm Mark Kurowski, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush, and you're listening to listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
You've heard us say that Winds of Change is listener-supported. That means you help us stay on the air with your dollars and your prayers. And we are asking for that help now. Please take a moment and go to our website, windsofchangeshow.com. That's windsofchangeshow.com. On the upper right-hand side of the page, there is a link, Support Winds of Change Show. Click on that link and donate securely with any major credit card. With your help, Winds of Change will continue to bring you the truth.
The Winds of Change
on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. You'll find a little bit of yesterday that will delight you today at the Family Hearth General Store, a nonprofit ministry of forming faithful families in historic Frankfort, Illinois. The 1870s style old storefront honors home, faith, and family life, featuring vintage wares and unique gifts for special family occasions. From Victorian replicas, vintage decor, quilts, candles, antique samplers, and jewelry, to unique books, hand-milled soaps, old-time candy, ice cream, and bottles of pop, you'll find a warm welcome here around the family hearth. A cozy fireplace, fresh gourmet coffees, and teas await your visit. So come, sit a spell. Find us on the main street of Frankfort at 119 Kansas Street, and be sure to visit the online store at formingfaithfulfamilies.com. like us on Facebook, or give us a call at 708-334-1988.
Welcome back to listener-supported Winds of Change. Again, I'm Mark Kurowski, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush, flying solo, or maybe so high today. We're really having I'm enjoying myself, but I want to talk to you about what I said at the beginning. We had just gotten done talking about transforming ourselves, transforming how we live our lives so that we can be the best person that we can possibly be. I have to tell you, there was a great article this morning in the Chicago Tribune by Phil Rosenthal about Ernie Banks. It was in the business section because Phil Rosenthal was writing about how Ernie Banks did not monetize his existence like many of the athletes do today. And so I want to bring attention to that. Now, if you want to make comment about this, you can tweet me at @myspiritadvisor, or you can get a hold of me via email at mark@myspiritualadvisor.com. Now, I happen to have the article. He makes a really great point. He said that Ernie Banks left a lot of cash on the table. But if you were to go to Derek Jeter and just Google Derek, or Yahoo Derek Jeter, if you were to Yahoo Derek Jeter, you would find out that Derek Jeter is like totally monetized, and that promoters had the worst time because the biggest thing that Ernie Banks wanted to do was to get to know you. You as a human being were critically important to this man. Now, I have to tell you, I became a Cub fan in 1968. I was 4 years old. I was almost five. And in my house in South Bend, there's a two-story, and it had this antenna that went up. And believe it or not, we could get Channel 9. And it was fuzzy. Didn't quite work. We moved when I was 8 years old. It was awesome because we had this tower that was 20 some feet in the air, and I was 8 years old. I used to climb up this tower, and I would move the antenna, and my brother would shout out the window to me whether or not the picture on the television was any good or not. He'd go, "Hey, yep, okay, keep going. That's good. Got it. Perfect." And then by the time I get down, he'd go, "No, I got to go back up again. I'm not going back up there." We would watch the games after school. Just loved watching Cub baseball. Loved baseball, period. I think it's a great game. I think people think that there's nothing going on, don't really know what is going on in baseball. But one of the things I loved about being a Cub fan was that we had Ernie Banks. You know, I can tell you that having no father figure in my life until about 8 years old that I really could connect with, there was something about seeing positive role models. You know, Charles Barkley said early in his career, "I'm not a role model." That's not true. We all are role models, whether we are people who are involved in sports or not. We are all role models. We really all should be watching what comes out of our mouth and what we are doing with our lives. There isn't a person. And I think nobody exemplified that more than Ernie Banks. He broke the color barrier for the Chicago Cubs. That's huge. That's huge. If you look at all the men who broke the color barrier in baseball, they all had that commonality about them. Men of grace, men of dignity. Larry Doby, Jackie Robinson, Ernie Banks, you name them. They all were men who knew how to carry themselves in public. And you know what? I think we need to remember that, because that isn't just an example for African Americans. Ernie Banks is not just an example for African Americans. He's an example for a poor little white boy from South Bend, Indiana, who climbed atop the antenna to move it around, to see the Cubs play, and to hear that happy voice, that voice of class. One of the things that Phil Rosenthal brought out was that on the announcement of Mr. Banks's passing, that all of a sudden, all across Facebook, were pictures of people, regular people, that they had with Ernie Banks, that he was a promoter's nightmare. You know how you line, you go to baseball promoters now and they have like somebody there to sign the baseballs and stuff. It was, you know, Phil brings this idea up. He says that they just, it's like a cattle call, man. Get through, sign the baseball with it, you know, as much, as quickly as you can without being rude. Not Ernie Banks. He wants to know who you are. He wanted to know what you were like. He wanted to know about you and your life. And for someone who was looking somewhere for hope, anywhere, Ernie Banks was an inspiration. So I know that Cub fans, we get, you know, knocked a lot for being in love with Wrigley Field, for being in love with all the ambiance of everything. Although I have to tell you, I once went to a Cub game with a good friend of mine, and I said, you know what? I just hope that there are baseball people that sit behind us, because if somebody gets here and is just going to talk about things other than baseball, I'm going to go crazy. And guess what happened? I got somebody who wanted to talk about doing their nails, going shopping, and all that stuff. I was like, oh, man. But all that trapping that we get caught up in it as Chicago Cub fans, right? There is something to be said to have someone called Mr. Cub, who is someone that is just an exemplary human being, who did not try to squeeze every last dime out of his fame, but instead used his fame to promote good causes as well as to provide for himself and his family. Now, on the other hand, we have Marshawn Lynch, who I think in an equally brilliant article written by Bill Plaschke, there is this wonderful art. He writes this article and he just says that look at how rude Marshawn Lynch is. And what he's doing is he's building his brand by being rebellious, by being confrontational, by being against. It's a brilliant, if you haven't read it yet, that's in the sports section of the Chicago Tribune. And I really highly recommend that you should go take a look at it. I'm going to read a little bit to you. He says that when Lynch was asked the questions, his answers were, I'm here so I won't get fined. I'm just here so I won't get fined. Hey, I'm here so I won't get fined. I'm just here so I won't get fined, boss. What kind of life is that? He doesn't sound like a very happy individual. I think that what we ought to be doing is praying for this guy. We ought to have on our daily prayer list Marshawn Lynch. Because you know what? When we're young, I was young and I did stupid things. I wish I could go back in time. I wish I could say to that younger version of myself, much like Morgan Freeman plays the character of Red in The Shawshank Redemption, he says he wishes he could go back and tell that stupid kid and get some sense into him. We all do stupid things. I just want to go to Marshawn and say, you know what, son? You have such a blessing and such an opportunity. The blessing is that you have a platform upon which you can do good and evil at a level that is beyond the wildest dreams of anybody. And you have a choice to make. The choice that you have to make is, are you going to make a difference in someone's life by the way that you comport yourself? Are you going to be an example? Because whether you want to be an example or you don't want to be an example, you are an example. Are you going to be an inspiration to a small young man, a little boy who just wants someone to love him, somebody to admire, somebody who's going to do the right thing? You know, that I think that that's one thing in dealing with people, but being receptive to people who are coming to me that need pastoral counseling, that need spiritual direction, is that so many of the people that come, they just need to know that they're loved. They just need to have someone say to them, God loves you, and that there are implications to that love, and they are life-changing, they are glorious, they are magnificent, they are wonderful, and I'm here to help you see where God is actually active in your life and calling you to do great things. And I am calling on Marshawn Lynch to get off of it and turn around and look at your life. Look how blessed you are. There are so many of us that would give our left arm to be able to run like you run. There are so many of us who would give whatever we could give in our lives so that we could put on the uniform of an NFL team, let alone a Super Bowl champion. There are so many of us who would give to have a platform to speak. But you, Mr. Lynch, you have one. And you have an opportunity. And I don't know why you're so angry. I would love for you to contact me at mark@myspiritualadvisor.com or tweet me at @myspiritadvisor and tell me why you're so angry. Because I don't want you to be angry anymore. Now, I've got just about a little over a minute left, and two minutes left, and I just want to say thank you to Ernie Banks. Thank you for being willing to move from shortstop to first base. Thank you for being willing to be in a profession that didn't pay you as well as they should have. Thank you for having the courage to break the color barrier and provide opportunities for children like Marshawn Lynch. Thank you for showing me and countless others what it means to be a man who carries himself with dignity and class, even at a time when you may not have been treated in all circumstances, probably were not treated in all circumstances, with dignity and class. So, I've been asked, I'm going to be on again, I guess, as a guest host. I'm really excited about it. And if there are some topics that you'd like for me to talk about that I haven't touched on, I would really like for you to get in touch with me at mark@myspiritualadvisor.com. If you've not tried spiritual direction, you probably should try it. In spiritual direction, I don't talk nearly as much as much as I do here on the radio, especially when I'm here alone. But this has been a great opportunity. If you get a chance, give your tribute to Mr. Banks. If you want to go down to the Daly Center, they're going to have his statue down there for the next 4 days. If not, then do what I've done. Take the opportunity to either post something on your Facebook page, tweet about it. I'd be glad to have you post it on my Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/myspiritualadvisor. I'm Mark Kurowski, and I've been sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. I'm very grateful for that. This is listener-supported Winds of Change on WNDZ AM 750. Have a great day.
To say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell of strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.